We are having a special class on the laws of Chanukah. We will learn Bezat Shem the Chaye Adam. The Chaye Adam was written by a rabbi in Europe. His name is Rav Danzig, and he was a big Tam Chacham. He wrote his work. He writes in the introduction with the intent that the rabbis and laymen as well will benefit from this work. To the layman, it's a quick summary of the halachot that he has to know. And to the rabbi, it's a quick review. And he says, you'll notice that in passing, in my summary, I also was machia. I also decided on all kinds of complex questions without making a point, here's a complex question and here's an answer. But in passing, he does decide in many complex questions. And there are many things that are known as the shita of the chayei adam. This book was learned throughout Europe and was accepted as a halachic work. And his opinion is given great weight halachically. The Mishnah Brura quotes him, and he's a person to reckon with. Meaning, some people just take a work and then write a short version of that work that doesn't reflect on their greatness. The Chaye Adam, really, his work is not just a short version of the Shulchan Aruch, but the work, because it does call the shots on certain complex questions, therefore it is a work, really a work unto itself. It's not just a summary. The author, Rav Avram Danzig, was from the city of Vilna, and he composed two works, the Chaye Adam and the Chochmat Adam. And he writes in his introduction that his goal in the Chaye Adam was that people will be able to learn a page a day, and then they'll finish in approximately 30 days all of the laws that are relevant to a person on any given day. And if they learn a few pages each Shabbos, so every few weeks they'll review the laws of Shabbos. So in the original printing, I guess it was a very small print, there was only about 30 pages until the laws of Shabbos. In our printing, and the printing I'm holding, which is an extra long printing, you have 300 and something pages. In the average printings, you have about 80 pages. I when I was first learning in yeshiva, when I went after high school to post-high school yeshiva, so I asked Rav Pesen Zatzal, how do I know what I'm supposed to do on any given day? I can't cover all the Gemaras and all the Shulchan Aruch just like that, and I want to keep the halacha. So he told me, learn the Chaye Adam. And when I read the introduction and I saw the Chaye Adam says that you're supposed to be able to finish my work every 30 days, at least the basics, the work before the laws of Shabbos, what's relevant every day. So I took my Chaye Adam and I wrote on the bottoms of each page, this is for day one, day two. I divided the days to 30. I divided, it came out to about five sides of a page, 2.5 pages in that edition. And that's how I learned it. And that was once you've learned it once or twice, and then the third and fourth time go much quicker. After the laws of Shabbos, he says, you have the laws of the different holidays. And before the holidays, you could learn the laws of those holidays quickly. Now, the only reason why this book might not be ideal for everyone is because, as far as I know, there's no English version of the Chaye Adam. I don't know of any translation that was put out. But it is an amazing work, and that's why I'd like us to learn it on the laws of Chanukah. For lack of time, I think I should just translate without reading the Hebrew text, and you guys could follow along inside the Hebrew. You guys disagree? I see looks of disagreement here. You guys prefer I read the Hebrew and translate? We brought up 5-6 copies. Why don't you have a copy? Where are all the copies? Yeah. Down here. On the bottom, he wrote a work, Nishmat Adam, which is an in-depth look at different topics in halacha. So all of this is are his works. Okay, so is it okay if I just translate and you guys follow the Hebrew inside? It's at the very end. It's at the end of the Chaye Adam. Here, this is the edition I had. After Ilchot Pesach, just before the end, you have Ilchot Chanukah and then Ilchot Megillah.
Ilchot Chanukah,
have it?
We're learning
Klal Kuf Nun Dalet. Yeah. Yeah. So. I think this way it'll just be easier to cover the whole thing. Yeah? Okay. So I'm translating. You guys could follow along in the Hebrew. In the second Beit HaMikdash, when there were wicked kings who had control, so they made decrees against the Jewish people and tried to annul their religion. And they didn't permit them to deal in Torah and mitzvot, and they took hold of their money and their girls, and they went into the Heichal, and they broke breaches in the walls of the Heichal, and they defiled that which was pure, and they oppressed the Jewish people a lot. And this went on until Hashem had mercy on them and rescued them from their hands. And then the children of the Hashmonai, the Kohanim Gedolim, they overcame and they killed them and they rescued the Jews from their hands. And they appointed a king from the Kohanim, and the kingship returned to the Jewish people for over 200 years until the destruction of the Second Temple. And when the Jews overcame their enemies and wiped them out, it was the 25th day of the month of Kislev. And they entered the Heichal, and they found no pure oil in the temple other than one flask. And there was no oil in that flask other than enough to light for one day. And they lit from that vessel, they lit the lamps of the Beit HaMikdash for 8 days until they were able to harvest olives and press pure oil. And because of that miracle, our sages instituted in that generation that these 8 days, the 8 days that begin with the 25th of Kislev, will be days of happiness and praise. And we light the candles on the evening, in the evening at the entrance to our house, every night of these 8 nights, to show and reveal the miracle. And these days are called Chanukah, Chanu, they came to camp. Kaf Hei, on the 25th of Kislev, is when they camped from fighting their enemies. And even though, yeah. Okay, and they came to camp. They camped, you're right. They were able to... Vayichan Yisrael neged ahar. You travel, you fight, and finally you could come to camp. You're right, it doesn't literally mean they rested, it means they camped. They were able to camp from chasing after their enemies, to just regroup and take camp. And even though the miracle really was 7 days, because they did have enough to light one day, nonetheless... Even though technically, without this miracle, the 25th was a day of its own miracle, because they rested from their enemies. So that day, you're right, that day wasn't its own, didn't have a miracle with the oil yet, because there was enough oil for one day. But that day was the day they were able to rest from their enemies. So that's a reason enough on that day to praise. And we find on Purim, our sages instituted that we have a day of holiday on the day we were able to rest from fighting our enemies. And being that on that day they did find the oil, so they instituted that we light on that day as well, to publicize the miracle of the oil on that day as well. Halacha Gimel. Even though we say halachically we no longer maintain the holidays that were temporary holidays of the Second Temple and were written in a work called Megillat Ta'anit. After the Second Temple was destroyed, so they annulled those temporary holidays. Nonetheless, Chanukah and Purim, which were instituted during the period of the Second Temple, and they were also part of that work, Megillat Ta'anit, they were not annulled, and they maintain the same status they had then, that it is prohibited to eulogize or fast on these days. But they're not holidays that forbade doing work, but we are permitted to do work on Chanukah and Purim. There is a custom that the women don't do melacha so long as the Chanukah candles are lit, and some say that on the first and eighth day they don't do any work, like Pesach and Sukkot, that the first and last day are Yom Tov, and it's a good minhag, and you shouldn't be lenient on them, the Chai Adam says, because even though technically this doesn't have a basis in halacha, but when people have a custom to do something which is prohibited, to prohibit something, even though technically it is permitted, we don't come and tell them, oh, it's permitted. No, if their custom is to prohibit it, so we respect that. Why is it that only women have this custom? They get the days off. They get to take a break on either while the candles are lit or when or on the first and eighth day. I don't know of anyone that has this custom. On the first and eighth day, they don't do any work. I never heard of that. I mean, I've heard of it in theory, but I don't know anyone in practice who has that custom. So why is it that the women get these days off? Because the miracle was done by a woman. Because the daughter of Yohanan Kohen Gadol, the sister of Matityahu, she was a beautiful woman, and she told the king, the enemy king, that she wants to be with him. So she gave him cheese, different types of things that were cooked with cheese, so that salty cheese would make him thirsty. And in those days, their juice was wine. I mean, if you weren't drinking water, you were drinking wine. So she gave him wine, and he drank the wine and fell into deep sleep. And then she cut off his head and brought it to Jerusalem. And when the chief general saw that the king was dead, so everyone ran. So the miracle was done by a woman. So that's why they have a holiday. They rest more than us. They have a greater holiday than us on this day. And being that the miracle was done by something made of milk, so some have a custom to eat things that are made of milk on Hanukkah as a commemoration of the miracle that was done by milk products. The miracle? I mean, that she got away with this. To exit, to kill the king isn't such an easy thing. No. Did she get away? She did get away.
When you kill the king, it's part of
I don't know, king usually has guards.
They say it's part of the king. Yeah, that's when there's no king and the guards and don't have no one to be loyal. They're only loyal for money.
I don't know, but to get into the king and they have to take his knife and kill him without his noticing. I don't know. And that he bought her whole story, that the daughter, Yehudit. No, he doesn't quote the name, but that's what it says. Halacha Dalit. Afal gav dasu besbev tanit. Even though on these days we are prohibited from eulogizing or fasting, nonetheless, if there's a wise person, halacha Dalit. Nonetheless, him we are allowed to eulogize when we have him in front of us. And if a person has a bad dream, so he could fast the Tanit Chalom when it's relevant. For us, it's probably never relevant. And if he did have to fast because he had a bad dream, so then he makes it. He fasts after Hanukkah to ask forgiveness for the fact that he fasted on Hanukkah. We don't fast any other fast during Hanukkah. So if a person is going to get married, he doesn't have to fast the day of his marriage.
Today was not
Hanukkah. Today was not, right? The day before Hanukkah, Chavdalit Kislev, you could fast, even though sometimes we would prohibit the day before a holiday. Here we do not. We don't prohibit the day before Hanukkah, and that's why the guy who got married tonight could have fasted today. Some people even fasted today to pay up for Erev Rosh Chodesh. There are people who fast every Erev Rosh Chodesh, every Yom Kippur Katan. So then they would fast today to make up for the Erev Rosh Chodesh, which is Hanukkah. Today we do not make a hesped. And ideally a person should not fast today, and we don't make a public fast on the day before Hanukkah either. There are those who say that there's a mitzvah, a little bit of a mitzvah, to have bigger meals on Hanukkah, to eat more on Hanukkah, because these days were the days in which they concluded the building of the Mishkan. Chanukat HaMishkan, the inauguration of the Mishkan. And furthermore, there was really a Chanukat HaBayit, there was an inauguration of the temple on these 8 days, because in the times of the Hashmonaim, we regained the temple, so we re-inaugurated it. But we don't say it's really a Sudas Mitzvah, and so if you want it to be a Sudas Mitzvah, you have to say songs of praise, you have to make it into Sudas Mitzvah, and the way you do that is you praise Hashem during the Suda. Of course, you could talk to Divrei Torah. Our sages instituted lighting Hanukkah candles. So we're up to Halacha Vav. One has to take great care to fulfill this obligation, and even if he's a pauper whose sole source of sustenance is charity, he has to find a way of obtaining the candles to light Hanukkah candles. Because we have to make the miracle known and praise Hashem and thank Him for the miracles that He's done for us. A person only has to light the minimum, which is one candle each night. That's the primary mitzvah. If a person, let's say, has only one candle and he's going to end up using that candle that night, so we say, even though ordinarily when you light the Hanukkah candles, you're not supposed to use them, but if he has no choice, he's a pauper and he's down to his last candle, we say, okay, light that candle for the sake of Hanukkah. And if you end up using it because you don't have a choice, okay, what can you do? Everyone's obligated to light Hanukkah candles, men, women, and children that already reached the age of chinuch. So the father has to teach them to light Hanukkah candles because we were all endangered and we all benefited from the miracle that we were saved from the Greeks. If a person is blind, so he should have his wife light for him, or else he should chip in for someone else to light for him. If he has his own house or his own room and there's no one else there, he doesn't have roommates, so then he should find someone to help him to light. A woman could light for a man. So that's why, technically, if it wouldn't bug your wives, then it would be a good idea for you guys to continue learning and your wives to light Hanukkah candles. Because every wife thinks that Hanukkah is family time, and she'll be very upset with you if you don't come home to light Hanukkah candles for her. So you better go home and light Hanukkah candles, because you got to make your wife happy too. But technically, halachically, the wife could light for the family. What oils do we use to light our Hanukkah menorah? So, really you could use any oil that'll light, even though it doesn't light as well as you might like, but if ultimately it lights, it's fine. On Shabbos, we don't use oils that don't light well. That's because on Shabbos, we use the light of the lamp, and we're concerned that if it doesn't light well, you'll deal with it on Shabbos and end up doing a biblical prohibition. But the Hanukkah candles, the Hanukkah lamp, you're not using its light, and therefore you can use any oil, provided that you're only going to put the amount of oil that you need that half hour after Shkir, after Tzitz Kochavim, that it needs to be lit. If it's going to light after that, so then you're running into difficulties. The ideal is to take Shemen Zayit, that's like the miracle in the temple, which was in Shemen Zayit, and if that's not readily available, so you could take other oils, preferably you take oils that light nicely. A candle also lights nicely, has a beautiful light, so you could also take a candle. Preferably you take a candle of wax, and if you can't get that, so you use other candles. What wicks? So again, you could use any wicks, even wicks that on Shabbos, on Friday, we wouldn't let you use to light into Shabbos, but on Hanukkah we do. Ideally we say take cotton or flax. But that's only ideally. If you don't have those readily available, you could use whatever you find. Whatever will light well. Whatever will light is also good. You could reuse the wicks. And one should not use wax that comes from houses of idol worship, because we say that's a disgusting thing to use for a mitzvah. Seems like the houses of idol worship used to leave their wax lying around, because this halacha shows up all over. Don't use that wax for a mitzvah. Don't use it for Friday night. Don't use it for shul. Don't use it for Hanukkah. And many different halachot that shows up. So I guess this was something that the Jews, I guess, did use frequently. So the halacha has to tell them, but don't use it for mitzvot. It's nicer to light in a lamp that's made of metal or glass, because earthenware can get filthy and it doesn't clean well. Their earthenware. Our earthenware is always coated with glass. So I don't know that's such an issue, but I never saw earthenware menorahs. If you're going to use earthenware lamps, so then you have to buy new ones each night, because they get disgusting with the lighting of each night. Or else you have to find a way of cleaning them really, really well. We don't know what this halacha is talking about, because our earthenware isn't like their earthenware. In their time, earthenware was the cheapest form of vessel. It was like our disposable goods. It was really the cheapest thing they could use, and it really got filthy and was impossible to clean. Today, our earthenware is all coated, and anyways, we don't have earthenware menorahs, so this isn't so relevant. But where it is relevant is that if you're going to use the glass cups from last year, then clean them out well. You'd be surprised, not a big deal. I do it every year. I clean out the glass cups. If you take a few minutes and you take into account that your hands will get cheres, your hands will get dirty if you let yourself get dirty, so then cleaning them doesn't take that long. It's not such a big deal. I clean them before I pack them for Hanukkah, and usually they stay clean most of Hanukkah. Yeah, and then I clean them again before I pack them again. Not Erev Hanukkah, because they're clean from last year. You don't want to pack up filthy glasses. I mean, if you don't have the time for it, so today for only a few shekel, you could get new glasses. But it's not right that people reuse their old glasses and the glasses look so disgusting. That's not the way we're supposed to do a mitzvah. People spend the extra money to buy all kinds of toppings on pizza and all kinds of baguette and every shtuyot in the world. And when it comes to Hanukkah menorah, they use bottle caps. That's not the right attitude. I mean, it's also a question of what message are you giving about a mitzvah? Like we discussed in our learning of Netivot Shalom, there are areas where a person can really build oneself. Meaning, the actual performance of the mitzvah is one thing, but the attitude with which we perform the mitzvah is where we can really express our love for the Torah and the mitzvot, and that's what our children will get. If a parent comes home and he says, shucks, I had to leave work early, and come, let's light the candles already, it's late, and oy vey, it's going to drip all over the furniture, be careful. And what kind of environment, what kind of attitude is he giving his kids? And if he comes and he takes out the menorah out of its encasing and he holds it close and he shows his kids, look, this is my beautiful menorah, then he's giving a message to the kids about how precious the mitzvot are. Meaning, by investing a few more minutes or a few more shekels, we can develop our own attitude to mitzvot. Chazal said, "Shelo yu mitzvot bezuyot alecha." Chazal said, when we have the mitzvah of kisui hadam, we have a mitzvah when one slaughters an animal, so if it's a bird or a wild animal, we have a special mitzvah to cover the blood. We make a blessing and then we cover the blood with earth. So the Torah says, "V'shafach v'chisa." He should, after the blood is dripping, so then he caused it to spill, he should cover it. And our sages said, with what did you cause it to spill? With your hand. You don't slaughter an animal with your foot, so cover the blood with your hand as well. Meaning that the blood is on the floor, and there's dirt on the floor. The most natural thing to do would be to kick over some dirt and cover up the blood with your foot. The Torah says, no. Get down, scoop up the dirt with your hand, and cover it with your hand. So you'd ask, what do I need to do it with my hands for? It's dirt. I need to get my hands dirty? The Torah says, yes. You have to respect the mitzvot so that the mitzvot won't be disgraceful in your eyes. Meaning, the mitzvah isn't disgraced. We can't touch the mitzvah. The mitzvah is holy regardless what we do. But the question is, what's our attitude to the mitzvot? Shelo yu mitzvot bezuyot alecha. In our eyes, we have to value the mitzvot. So the Torah says, yeah, get down, get your hands dirty, pick up the dirt, and cover it, make a blessing, and then cover it. So the same thing is true with all mitzvot. We have to treat the mitzvot with chavivut, with fondness. We're fortunate to be given the mitzvot, and our attitude makes a world of a difference to us and to those around us as well. Yeah?
And a question with Suya, though.
Yeah?
Unless it's Asha beheaded, over there, Kisuya Adam appears, that will conceal his blood, so our killing will not be revealed. Is our Kisuya Adam implying that it's a sin to slaughter an animal, or that it's not
the
idea or something?
I don't know everything that's written, obviously. I don't know close to everything that's written. But the Midrashim that I'm familiar with say that it was a special merit that they were given. Just like the Greeks. We're contending with the Greeks here, right? In Hanukkah. And the Greeks, because their forefather Yefet covered his father Noach. So, right? Bnei Yefet, the Pasuk says, Gomer u'Magog u'Meshech v'Yavan v'Tuval. Right? One of Yefet's children are Yavan. Right? Yafte lokim le'Yefet v'Yishkon ba'alei Shem. We say, that's Greek. That's the beautiful language that Yefet was given. So Noach had three children, Shem, Ham, and Yefet. Yefet had a child named Gomer, he had a child named Magog, he had a child named Yavan. And the Greeks come from the child named Yavan. Now, the merit that Yefet got for covering his father's shame respectfully was that his offsprings would be buried after we demolished them at the great war of Gog and Magog. So that's an honor, that a person's body gets buried, that his blood gets buried. So too, Chazal say that when Rivka was coming to meet Yitzchak, so as she got off the camel, she got hurt, and a deer came by and covered her blood with earth. And Hashem said, you came by to cover her blood, I will give you the merit that your blood will be covered, I'll give you a special. So that's why wild animals and birds. Why birds is a good question. It's another discussion. But it seems to be a merit, not an apology.
That would be fitting for a slaughter, but that would not be fitting with our last week's parsha.
So I'm not sure that last week's parsha is, you can say they're analogous. I'm not sure. I don't know. Okay. So we did the first 9 halachot.